Good evening and welcome to My Stogie Mystagogy with your host, Don Gonzalez.
And Mark Connolly.
Joining us again,
the ever-present guest, Kevin Gonzalez.
This is episode 20. Yes, that's right, 20. Dos Equis of season 2. And in celebrating this milestone, little big milestone for us, hitting 20 is a pretty big deal. Mark and I are smoking Opus X's, so there are two Opus X's in the room.
Exactly.
Get that, 20. And we're drinking a, what's the name of it again?
It is a Johnny Walker blended something.
It's Blender's Batch, 10-year-old scotch, two glasses of scotch, both 10 years old, equal 20. So, a little stretch there, but.
Yeah.
But didn't want to go buy a 20-year-old bottle of scotch.
Yeah. When we have episode 40, we'll buy a 40-year-old bottle of scotch. Or not.
Or we'll buy another 10-year-old and have four glasses.
Or two 20s. No, whatever. All right.
So, tonight, we're going to start off segment one, obviously, talking about the cigars we're smoking. Mark and I are both smoking an Opus X made by Arturo Fuente, and we'll give our own individual takes on that. Kevin is smoking a different cigar. I'll let him tell you about that when we get to him in just a moment. And today's topic is friendship. And we're going to talk about friendship from the standpoint, as kind of like we did last week with leisure, from a philosophical standpoint and its theological implications. That sound good?
Sounds good.
All right, we'll start with Kevin. Kevin, what are you smoking today?
I'm being boring. I'm smoking another Dan Cruz classic. So if you're not familiar at this point, you haven't been listening to the podcast quite enough.
You're going to give up. So it's a Robusto size, looks like a 50 ring gauge.
Yeah, I would concur with that statement. It's got great flavor, though. It sticks with you. It stays strong throughout. I don't remember who told me this, but somebody said along the way, somewhere in my cigar smoking days, that a cigar will let you know when it's done. Some cigars I've smoked in the past quit on you, like, long before you're ready for them to quit on you. And this thing will just let you keep going until you're burning your fingers, and it never loses its flavor. The other thing I like about it is, I'm competitive by nature, and this thing likes to hold its ash really, really well. But I have to watch myself, because, you know, I don't want to be, like, ashing all over myself or the beautiful furniture I'm sitting on. But, yeah.
All right. And what are you drinking?
What am I drinking? It's a lemonade.
All right.
In a styrofoam cup.
In a styrofoam. I'm classy.
Yeah, we're high tone here, folks.
Yep.
All right. Mark?
Well, I am smoking the aforementioned Opus X. And these are cigars that are sort of out there in the world. So they have the people who go, Opus X is the most magnificent thing ever. And then you have the kind of people that go, Rolls Royces and all that. It's say the same kind of things about an Opus X. And so all I can say is it's a very good cigar. When I started this, I actually had a sense of creaminess. And I'm thinking that has something to do with the wrapper that's on this. Don't know what the wrapper is. I'm guessing it's a Connecticut shade. I'm not sure, though. But it's smoking very cool, which is nice. And it's very even-tempered. And you mentioned cinnamon, and I am getting that.
From the cigar?
Yeah.
I don't know if I picked up that cinnamon from the cigar or from the drink, but it was very, very much at the front end of my palate.
It may be the drink that I'm mixing with the cigar. But it's a nice cigar. It's a nice celebratory cigar. You mentioned 20 episodes, and I think one of us read somewhere along the lines, can't remember who, because since we're such good friends, our thoughts intertwine, and we don't really know who's responsible for which one. But podcasts either get to 20 or they don't. There's like that magic number somewhere in there. And I think I read once that like 13 or 14 was kind of a lot of them never get that far.
Right.
And so we're well past that, and 20 seemed like a good milestone. So this is a celebration. of our podcasting, and it's fitting. And I like the scotch. Neither one of us have tried this, but it's, as Don mentioned, the Johnny Walker blended batch.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a reason why they blend scotches. Originally, they blended scotches because a single malt scotch was sometimes undrinkable. So you would have to blend it to make it something that was smooth enough to drink, which is why the single malt scotches are expensive, because they're a limited batch. Not all of them are drinkable. So, most scotches have been blended over history, at least those that are commercially sold. And I don't think there's any stigma associated with drinking a blended scotch. Is it good? Yes. Do you like it? Yes. Then fair enough.
Yeah.
So.
And that's kind of our philosophy here as it comes to both cigars and the spirits that we drink.
Yeah. The Opus X is one of the cigars I've had where I would say it might actually be worth what you have to pay for it. Because my little philosophy is a $5 cigar probably is five times better than a $1 cigar. But a $25 cigar is not necessarily five times better than a $5 cigar. This is definitely better than a $5 cigar. Sometimes you do, you know, with cigars, sometimes you do actually get what you pay for. So, there you go.
Alright. So, I'm smoking the Opus X as well. I've probably been smoking it now for a good 20 minutes. Got about an inch of ash on it. The pre-draw was wonderful. No problem whatsoever. It's, you know, it's a clean draw when I draw on it. Lots of good smoke. Got a lot of different flavors. Like I said just a little while ago, can't figure out yet if it's the cinnamon. The cinnamon is coming from the cigar or from the drink. Opus X's have a reputation for being very strong. So consequently, I made sure to have a big meal before I came tonight because I didn't want to get sick. I don't want to be lame. I had a big old hamburger before I came. And the drink, I'm not a scotch drinker. I mean, very rarely do I drink scotch, and my memories of scotch tend to be kind of a bitter drink. This is not bitter at all. It's smooth. It doesn't have any sort of bite to it, and it's got different flavors. I'm still trying to figure out what all those flavors are. Hopefully by the end of the show, I'll have a better idea of what those are.
Yeah, of course, one of the things with scotch is it's, you know, the raw materials are smoked. You know, basically they're put on the floor of a wooden building that has, you know, it wouldn't be a floor like what we're used to in a house. It's a floor that's got gaps in it and all that. And then underneath, they cut this peat out of these bogs, and they take them, and I guess they dry them to some extent, and then they set them on fire, but they smolder because they're damp. And so that smoky flavor gets imbued into the ingredients, and it carries through the whole distilling process. And I think that's part of the reason why people who smoke cigars like to pair it with a scotch, because the whole thing works together and it's a harmony. And you were saying that it was smooth, smoother than Pirate.
Yes, off air I was saying that. I'm really blown away with how smooth it is, because that has not been my experience the few times I've had scotch. And I've shared with you before that I remember growing up in college that gin was my preferred drink, and I've always considered gin to be kind of a young man's drink, and I always thought of scotch being an older man's drink. And as I got older, I tried scotch a couple of times, didn't like it. So I guess I'm an old man now, because I can appreciate the taste of the scotch.
Do you remember what you've tried before?
I know I've tried Dewar's White Label, maybe.
Yeah.
I've tried Dewar's before. I don't know if Dewar's is considered moderately good or bad or just...
I don't think it's highly regarded. I think it's thought of as a scotch someone might start with, okay, and then graduate to good stuff.
Yeah, I didn't graduate from anything. I just, like, hated it. I've tried Johnny Walker Red. Thought that had too much of a bite. Now, that was years ago.
Yeah.
The only... No. All the Johnny Walkers are considered scotches, right? Like the red, the green, yeah, the black label, all that stuff.
Yes.
And when I was at the Big Smoke, I had the blue label, and that is phenomenal.
Yes. And with a price tag.
Yes. A couple of years ago, my brothers, in celebration of how well their business is doing, they bought a bottle, and I had a couple of shots of that with them, and that's probably the best scotch I've ever had. I mean, in my limited taste, yeah, but one of the best spirits I've consumed, period. And I tried... We just drank. We didn't smoke cigars that night, so I don't know how that pairs up with cigars, but...
Yeah, well, the blue label is sort of recognized as being a good scotch.
So when we hit 50, we're going to buy one of those bottles.
All right.
So that's sounds like a plan. Approximately 30 weeks away, so...
Yes.
Start saving your nickels.
Right. So the closest thing I've had to that was Johnny Walker Double Black that I got for my birthday, and that was very good.
Was it?
Yeah.
Now, where does platinum fit in all that?
I have no idea.
So this is what I will say. Shout out to Taylor Marshall and his podcast, The Maccabee Society. If you're more interested in learning about entry-level scotches and drinking scotch, now he is a noted scotch drinker. And for those of you that don't know, Taylor Marshall is a Catholic theologian, Dr. Taylor Marshall. Converted to Catholicism, used to be Episcopalian priest, or Anglican priest.
Yeah.
Very solid, great speaker. He actually spoke at Joe Catholic's Men's Conference 3 years ago, I believe, right before he took off. And when I mean take off, his podcast, his blog, everything has exploded.
Yeah.
And he actually teaches at a seminary during the summertime. That's how highly regarded. He teaches at a pontifical seminary in Rome during the summertime, so
wow,
he's got some theological skills.
Yeah.
But he also is a manly man. He likes to hunt, so he writes about hunting. It's kind of, in my mind, the Maccabee Society podcast and blog are kind of a Catholic version of the Art of Manliness website, if you've ever been to that.
All right, very good.
Apparently the dogs are excited about the 20th episode as well.
Yes, those are the dogs celebrating in the background. We did pour some scotch in their water.
So, would you say that the Opus X and this scotch are friends?
I would say they are.
So maybe we flesh that out a little bit more as we get into the talk. So, you know, the funny thing about it is, as I was preparing for tonight, I did not bother at any point to write down a definition of friendship. Hmm. Did you? Or did you come across?
I did not.
I mean, talk about what it is,
well,
and what they are.
Yeah, I mean, I came across a definition, and it's from Aristotle. I mean, sorry, Aquinas. Let's see.
Mark is currently attempting to read small text without his reading glasses.
Yeah, not going very well. So this is a paraphrase, but it's true friendship is based on unselfish love for another person. What is meant by unselfish love is the constant, effective desire to do good to another. But although unselfish love is a basis for friendship, it is not enough. There must be some common ground or area between two persons who form such a relationship. Between people, there is enough common ground to form friendships. Every person has experiences of sorrow, joys, hopes, etc., with which to share with another. And sharing one's inner life with another one comes to live not just one life, but two. So I'm going to stop there, but I think the idea is that... your friend becomes your other self.
Okay.
As it fully fleshes out.
And I think as we continue this conversation, I think we'll be able to unpack that definition as we go along.
Yeah.
So I was kind of, I kind of went into this knowing at least anticipating that you were going to be drawn to the kind of Thomistic side of things.
Right.
So I kind of spent most of my time focusing on the Aristotelian side of things. And when I talked to Kevin before the show, I said, hey, there are a lot of references to friendship and the catechism. He's kind of our catechism guy. So maybe sprinkle some references to the catechism as we go through. That'll be our framework. If we stick to it, great. If we don't, well, you know, keep up and follow. Take good notes, sketch note, bullet journal, whatever you want to do. But there was a quote, and I can't remember where it came from. I want to say it's from Sirach that stood out for me. Is that, and I didn't catch the actual chapter and verse, but nothing is as precious as a loyal friend.
But
one thing that Aristotle did say is that no true friendship happens by accident. And, you know, one of the themes that came out of last week is that even something like leisure has to be intentional.
Right.
So developing friendship has to be intentional as well. And I think there's one thing that we can say about friendship is what it is not. We live in a time where people will talk about how they have, oh, dude, I got 5,000 friends on Facebook. No, you don't.
No.
You don't have 5,000 friends. You have 5,000 people that, you know, that you might be acquaintances to. And then the other thing that we live in, so the other extreme is that we've talked about this before on the podcast, is we live in a time now where people misunderstand or can't comprehend that two men can be close friends without there being a bromance involved or having some sort of sexual undertones.
Yeah.
That two guys can't love each other in friendship that way.
Right. And I'll even, to make it even more uncomfortable for everybody, I'll even say that they can have an intimate relationship without it being wet and sticky.
So,
Kevin is very carefully not laughing out loud at that reference, but my point is I think that because of that misunderstanding that you referenced on, I think that especially in the current culture that we're in, it's just assumed that if you've got feelings along that line, that it's got to turn into a sexual relationship, and it does not.
I think that mentality too, I think that extends... I think in current culture, it's more prominent in American society than on a global level. Not to say it doesn't exist on a global level, but one of my best friends, Mikael, is from Sweden. And we share in that intimacy that you talk of. And there's no qualms about telling each other that we love each other.
Right.
Because we do. And I guess we can get into that a little bit, too, as we kind of break that down a little bit as we talk as well. Just from the simple fact, like, okay, just a quick example. He just got back from Sweden. He went home to see his parents, and he probably spent a month there. And though I knew it wasn't a true reality for unsaid reasons, there was a hope and a fear that he wasn't coming back.
Yeah.
To America, because I know he misses home, and then, you know, his wife's American, his children, his children share dual citizenship, but America's not home. You know, he may live here, but Sweden is home.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to put, I can't put myself fully in those shoes of what he experiences and has experienced over the years as he's been here with us in America, but that true friendship, that true love was expressed in those battling emotions of both how much it would be joyous for him to be able to find a way to get back home and stay home, but on the same token, knowing what everybody who's grown to know and love him here would be losing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, what you're describing there is actually your desire for him to have his good, which is to be with his bigger family, while at the same time acknowledging the loss that you would have, which is that connection that's necessary
right.
in true friendship. So, yeah, that's definitely something we're going to talk about more in depth. What I wanted to give our listeners an idea of some sources to look at and what the source material is the Nicomachean, is that how you pronounce it?
I've heard of Nicomachean, so I don't know.
The Nicomachean Ethics of Aristotle, Book 8 in particular, talks about friendship. And it is the basis on which St. Thomas... Well, I'm going to defer to you on this, so you know, if I mess this up, please correct me. But one of the gifts that St. Thomas gave to the church and to the world is taking the kind of secular philosophy of Aristotle and kind of merging it with the theology of, you know, bringing God to it.
Right.
And demonstrating that it's possible. Because Aristotle's philosophy can only take you so far. And then Aquinas takes you to the next step. Because the ultimate friendship that I think we'll talk about should probably be the tail end of what you bring to the table is friendship with God.
Right.
And that's not possible with Aristotle's view of friendship.
Correct.
One other source I want to mention before I forget is that St. Thomas apparently wrote a commentary on that book.
Yes.
And I don't own it. At least I don't think I own it. If I do, I own it electronically.
In Bourbon?
Yes. But all the resources that I read and listened to recommended that book, so now I want to own that book too.
Yeah. Just as a real quick and overly brief and simplified summary, at the time that Aquinas was starting to look at Aristotle, the predominant Greek thought that was an influence in the church was from Plato. And so Augustine was somebody who was familiar with Plato. And I don't know how it all happened, but the knowledge and familiarity with Aristotle had gone away. And so most of what people knew about the Greeks at that time sort of focused on Plato. Aristotle came back into Europe via the Muslims.
Right.
Averroes and Avicenna, I think. And so St. Albert the Great, who was a genius in his own right, basically set Aristotle on the path of, or Aquinas on the path of, look at this Aristotle and see what it's all about. And it was very controversial because it was seen as a threat to Catholicism because he had done so much with just human reason and without any revelation. He brought it pretty much to a pinnacle. And so what Aquinas did was he took Aristotle, and I'm gonna say corrected for the fact of Jesus. And so he was able to adapt the person that he just simply refers to as the philosopher. If you read in the Summa Theologia or Theologica, depending on which translation or how they translated the title, when he's in complete agreement with something Aristotle is saying, he refers to him as the philosopher. If he's disagreeing with him, he refers to him as Aristotle.
Interesting.
And so that's kind of a sort of a thing to keep an eye on when you're looking in the Summa. But he's just simply the philosopher. And so that shows his esteem for Aristotle's thought.
So one of the foundations that Aristotle laid is the notion that friendship is tied hand in hand with virtue, particularly the virtue of charity. And he actually, I found this really fascinating, and we talked a little bit about this earlier this afternoon. He broke friendship, and I'm going to do air quotes, into three categories. Kind of a utilitarian friendship that he called the friendship of usefulness. The friendship of pleasure is the second type, and then authentic friendship is what I'm going to call the third one, a real friendship. And the And the first two were kind of superficial friendships. And I found this fascinating because what I shared with Mark earlier this afternoon is that I always kind of defer to Mark on things philosophical because that's not one of my strengths, just because I get what Stacy calls tired head when I read philosophy, and I just haven't had the discipline to really push myself through that, which is something I need to work on. So I didn't take any philosophy classes in college. You know, I took a logic class as my philosophy credit when I was in college. So I never got exposed to any of it until really late in life. But I had this, I always held on to this belief that friends had a, the friend, to be my friend meant something. It was, I had a very high standard for what it meant to be a friend. And I would tell people, you know, people would say, oh, you know, your friends from work. And I'm like, they're not my friends. They're colleagues. They're people I work with. Or so-and-so's acquaintance. And I would tell people, I can count the number of friends that I have maybe on one hand. And what I didn't know is that I was kind of buying into Aristotle's model.
Right.
The usefulness model of friendship is like, you know, not that you're using people necessarily, but that the relationship is based still on some commonality, but it's more of a temporary common ground, like business partners, where you are utilizing each other's relationship to better your career or whatever.
Yeah, in a mutually beneficial manner.
Right. And then once that need goes away, or somebody, you know, moves up in position or whatever, that friendship goes away.
Or the person leaves the company, or you leave the company.
Right.
Probably everybody's had that experience of having somebody that they work with that they think of as a friend, and when if one of them leaves the company, the friendship goes away.
Right. And then the second one was pleasure. And I think of this as kind of frat boys. You know, I was in a frat when I was in college, and, you know, that you share a common love for things. It could even be a teammate on a sports team. You know, the guys you hang out with when you go to the bar, or that sort of thing. But once that connection of what pleasure it is, whether it's being on the sports team or being in the frat, like, actually, it's funny that we're talking about this because a former student of mine show up at school today, and he's like, Mr. G, weren't you a pike at SMU? And I'm like, how in the world do you even know that? And he ran into somebody who is the father of one of his best friends in college, who was one of my fraternity brothers.
Oh, wow.
And he graduated a year ahead of me. And I'm like, man, I'm sorry, but I really wasn't close to that guy. I mean, I remember him, but I didn't have a long-lasting friendship afterwards. You know, we shared some things together in college, but that's it.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the pleasure part. And then the more authentic one is built on virtue. And you kind of alluded to this on your definition. It's, you know, willing the good for the other for their own sake. Not right. For your sake, but for their sake. And that's kind of what Kevin was talking about.
Exactly.
His friend. That you have a shared life. You know, that y'all do things together. You have commonality. You inspire each other. You know each other. There's a knowledge that there is a friendship there. That's
right.
Actually one of the other requirements. And that sounds funny, but when you start to think about it, the other way of saying that is it's not a one-way street.
Right.
You know? What I really thought Kevin was going to say, and he kind of came right up to the edge of saying it without saying it, is when his friend was gone, he missed it.
Yeah.
Like when you were out of town, you know, I hadn't seen you in almost 2 weeks. I authentically missed you.
Yeah.
And I was excited for you to come back. And I think that's evidence of that. And you said this, and I think it's right on mark. It's, no pun intended, that a friend is like another self. And the other thing is that, and we talked about this last week with Leisure, is to have a real friendship takes time. You have to invest time.
Right.
And it requires intimacy. Mm-hmm. And so in order for it there to be intimacy, there has to be a level of trust that comes with time. And then it also has to be, what is the words escaping me? There has to be a level of being comfortable with being vulnerable.
Yes.
And very early on in our friendship, we talked about that because, you know, there are things that you and I share off mic, off the show, that I don't share with anybody else. And in some, and I've said this before, and I've even said it to my wife. You know, I consider you my best male friend, and there are things I share with you that I will not share with my wife, because there are some things that I think that as a man, you better understand of me than she can.
Right.
So, and I think the other thing that's part of that too is that I think a real authentic friendship requires that it's based on virtue. Mm-hmm. That we really are seeking each other's good.
Right.
And, you know, and I think that, you know, I was thinking about this as I was getting ready for tonight's show, is how we became friends. Because, and I think that there was a little bit of intention at the beginning. We discovered very quickly early on that we had some things in common. And then, you know, spending 3 years together, you know, working on that master's degree certainly didn't hurt.
Right.
Fortifying the, you know, the friendship. So that's kind of the foundation that Aristotle lays in talking about what authentic friendship is. You know, I think if you had to narrow it down, the key factors are that it's built on virtue, that you're seeking the good of the other for the sake of the other, and that you know each other, and that there's a commonality and there's an investment
right
in each other.
And one definition that I ran into, and I brought it up before in Joe Catholic, but one of Aristotle's kind of definitions of friendship, if you will, are two people exploring together to know truth. And we spend a lot of time doing that.
Right. I mean, I don't think there'd be this podcast without that.
No.
Yeah. This is kind of the fruits of that.
Right.
There's two words. You mentioned charity, and you just mentioned fruits. And there's three words. Joy, peace, and mercy. Those are the fruits of charity. And the church ties that in directly with friendship. We mentioned maybe in a little catechesis. So in, you know, paragraph 1829 in the catechism tells us that these fruits of charity in themselves are friendship and communion, which I think we just hinted at too. And they quote it. St. Augustine's quoted as saying that love is itself the fulfillment of all our works. And I think that that can be fulfilled, again, with that communion.
Yeah, and that goes back to some of the stuff that we talked about last week.
Yeah. It's hard to have leisure entirely by yourself.
Yeah.
You know? Because at some level, you want to share it with somebody. And it could be your spouse or your friend, or it could be a group of people. But still, we are beings who want to be in community. And so having that other person to share something with makes it even greater. And as maybe a sort of a frivolous example of that, I know jokes that I can say to myself, and I think in my head, yeah, that's a funny joke, but I'm not laughing. I don't laugh until I tell it to somebody. And they laugh, and I laugh because they're laughing, and I, you know, I'm able to enjoy a joke. It might be 30 years since the first time I heard it or told it, but that opportunity to share it with somebody makes it current and alive right now. I don't know if that ties in or if you intended to bring up the iron sharpens iron from Proverbs, but that's part of that. And one thing I read is iron will sharpen iron, but iron will also dull iron.
Very good point.
And so you can have friendships that you think are friendships that fail the definition because they don't make you a better person.
Right.
They make you a worse person.
And I was thinking about that too, because I've had some of those type of quote-unquote friendships over the years. And, you know, we have a tendency to call them bad influences.
Right.
And I'm not prepared to use that term because I think that's kind of a victim type of statement. You know, you choose the friends that you're with and you make choices related to that. But I can recall at least, you know, two major times in my life when I chose to spend time with people who were not building me up. Not necessarily tearing me down, but I was sharing in things that weren't of God and things right. that weren't going to lead me down a righteous path of virtue.
Yeah.
And that type of friendship's not sustainable.
No. No, because ultimately, at some point, it will become utilitarian. And then if it crosses that line to use, then it's that is no longer friendship. Don't let it go, Don. Try to relight it.
Halfway through. Talk too much. So my cigar just went out because I talked too much.
Yes.
And Kevin quoted me a moment ago, whether you knew it or not, I'm the one that says that a cigar will let you know when it's done. And my cigar just went out, so it's done. And I will not relight a cigar because you draw in all that bad smoke and it makes the cigar taste bad.
See, and I have a different philosophy. A cigar's done when I tell it it's done.
I'm going to try, you know what? I'm going to follow my friend's lead and I'm going to modify my view just for tonight because this is a cigar I've been wanting to smoke for a long time.
So knock that ash off, that one that's there, and then blow.
All right, Gonzalez relit a cigar on the podcast. It's history. See if it holds up.
Yep, hopefully it will. Hopefully I didn't lead you astray.
I have confidence you would not.
Well, I have only your good in mind.
So let's just a break from the friendship talk for a moment, a little cigar 101. Now, I joke about it, but really, very rarely do I relight a cigar. But they do say that if you are going to relight a cigar, so that you don't, because what will naturally happen is the, what I call the dead smoke will start drawing in to the non-burning tobacco and kind of make that taste bad, like you're smoking an ashtray. So what they tell you to do, which is exactly what you told me to do, is as you're lighting it, blow through it first before you take a draw to kind of blow out that bad.
Yeah. So you have to let me know if we salvaged it or not. So.
You know, it's an interesting tie-in.
Yeah.
To friendship within the faith,
okay.
within the church. Church tells us in Catechism 396 that God created man in his image and established him in his friendship. A spiritual creature, man can live this friendship only in free submission to God. And it continues, it goes a little deeper than that. It goes into the initial breaking of that friendship with original sin.
Hmm.
You just mentioned, you know, not leading him astray.
Right.
So it felt like a good tie-in.
Yeah.
I lost my train of thought. I was going to go somewhere else with that.
Well, maybe I'll come back to you.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder if your, John 15:15 will spark something for him.
Well, did you have an opportunity to look at that? Because I shared that with you.
Yes. No, I've always been, I don't like just looking at one verse, because it allows for people to take it and blow it out of context. But I did look at it. And for those that aren't familiar, John 15:15 says, I no longer call you slaves because a slave does not know what his master is doing. I have called you friends because I have told you everything I have heard from my Father. But prior to that is the greatest commandment. In John 15:12, he says, this is my commandment, love one another as I love you. No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. And God shows forth his almighty power by converting us from our sins and restoring us to his friendship by grace. That's paragraph 277 of the Catechism, and it all kind of circles. You know, when I was prepping, and looking at the catechism and looking at the scripture about friendship, there were some central ideas that kept popping up that involved friendship. So I guess you can call them core characteristics. And I think what we're being told by God and through Christ is that, one, I just mentioned, you know, it's a free submission. That friendship is a choice. That God loves us, God created us in His image, and we have that choice to return that love. And there's, just like with any friendship, though, there's an expectation. You know, and you, some people would hear, "Do as I command," and they're like, "Oh, well, now there's being orders." I mean, it's not commandment in that regard, because it's still free. You know, Christ goes on to say that you didn't choose me, I chose you. And then your choice was to believe and to follow.
Yeah. So he initiated the friendship.
Right. And then there's this, with that, so you, with that friendship, when you have the, when you choose that relationship with God, when you choose to have that friendship, you are choosing to believe what God has said. You know, you believe that He is the Creator. And I mean, if you truly believe that He is omnipotent, that He is, you know, He is who is, then, again, there's an expectation with that, and that we can, we as humans, we're fallible. We have sin. We can fall away from that grace. What I like, one of the first paragraphs I came across in the Catechism when I was looking into this actually hit me pretty hard, because it talked about the sacraments. It speaks to reconciliation and the Eucharist. And anybody who knows me knows that the Eucharist is probably one of my favorite sacrament, because of how powerful it is, because of what it means to us. The fact that we as Catholics, we believe that we know it is the body and blood of Christ, and just how much power lies in that. But paragraph 1468 goes in detail, and it talks about the whole power of the sacrament of penance consists in restoring us to God's grace and joining us with Him in an intimate friendship. And it talks about reconciliation with God is thus the purpose and effect of this sacrament. For those who receive the sacrament of penance with contrite heart and religious disposition, reconciliation is usually followed by peace and serenity of conscience with strong spiritual consolation. Indeed, the sacrament of reconciliation with God brings about a true spiritual resurrection, and then it ends with it being the most precious is friendship with God. And that was the first one I looked at. I don't know if it wasn't even the first one, the first reference point that I was,
right,
you know, looked at. It was just the first one I happened to grab and read, and it was just like, it just, everything came full circle. And when you look at that, I think you're better able to understand the original statements about following Christ, doing as He's commanded, and loving one another. And I think on a base level, one of the things that Christ talks about in Scripture is that what greater love than to lay down one's life. And Dad, you were talking about your high level of friendship and your standards for who a friend really is. I adopted that. Because when you think about it, when you think about who's truly your friends, for me that's always been, who can call me at 3 o'clock in the morning that I'm going to respond to?
Amen.
You know, if you call me at 3 o'clock and I come running, you're more likely on that friendship list. If I look at my phone and go, oh no, you know, now granted, I probably wouldn't do that for really anybody if there's a real need, just simply because now we're going back to the fruits of charity.
Right.
Right, but...
but still, there would be that initial immediate impulse of, yes, of course, let me get in my car, I'm on my way, versus, okay, yeah, it would be the right thing to do to go help this person.
Yeah, and I can tell you from experience that I have a friend like that. And he's actually the guy who introduced me to Stacy.
Hmm.
he and I were friends through law school. And I had a dark period in my life where I called him at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm a single guy. I was in a bad place, literally. He's married. He's got his family. And I didn't know anybody else called him. He didn't question me. He didn't say, you know, what the hell are you doing calling me at 3 o'clock in the morning? He said, stay where you are. I'll come get you. And Peter and I don't get to talk to each other as much as we used to now. But I promise you, if that guy calls me at any moment and says, I need you, I'm going to be there for that guy. Because when I had a moment of need, he was there. And yeah. So you're absolutely right when you say that. And I was also thinking as you were reading those passages from the Catechism that I think that those passages, we can bridge those with the Aristotelian view with some of the things that St. Thomas talks about to bring it all together.
Yeah. One of the things, this is a really good example of a case where Aquinas takes Aristotle's thought and then takes it further. Because Aristotle's definition of friendship, and you alluded to this earlier, would not admit of any possibility of friendship with God.
And can
I, sure.
Yeah, what I forgot to mention was that Aristotle did not, but one of the things he said is that a master and a slave could not be friends. Right. There has to be an equality right. amongst the two. And so therefore he said, I don't remember if he said God or gods. I can't remember if he believed in a single God or not. But he essentially said that God and man could not have a friendship.
Yeah.
And so that's his limitation. And that's where St. Thomas comes in.
Right. And so, and it's really from that John 15:15 that Aquinas works from. But it's that idea, so Aristotle's saying that a slave and a master cannot be friends. And in a slave-master relationship, it's like an employer-employee relationship. You will hear, or you will be taught, or you will see the truth that you can't really be friends with the people you manage. Because at some point, you've got to tell them to do something, whether they want to do it or not. Or you might have to fire that person or something like that. So there's a sort of a human-to-human recognition of sometimes relationships are not equal.
Right.
The difference would be if the boss extended that friendship. The employee, it's not really their place. The slave is not really the place to initiate that friendship. That has to come from the master. So the analogy with God, of course, is that God is, if you want to use the term master, the idea simply being that there's a superiority involved there. People don't like to think about hierarchy and all that, but hierarchy exists. And so if God initiates that friendship, which he did, specifically through the incarnation, then all of a sudden that offer has been extended. And that's why the basis of friendship is charity, because it was God's charity to mankind that makes friendship with God a reality,
exactly.
an actual possibility. So that's an example of Aquinas taking Aristotle further than Aristotle could go. And that's because of revelation.
Right.
So one of the things that that I try to do with that sort of information is go, okay, so what does that mean in day-to-day life with our fellow human beings? And you alluded to this a few years ago. It's pretty easy in our really busy lives to just stop talking to another person. And months can go by and people go, what happened to your friend? And it's like, oh, we're still friends. We just haven't talked to each other in 2 years. So somebody picks up the phone and says, hey, how are you doing? That's that initiation.
Right.
But since we're all equals in reality, as far as you're not in an employer, employee, slave, master, God, creature relationship, either side is capable of initiating that reconnect. and it doesn't really matter who. And if one person initiates that, the instinct of the other side, the person initiating it can't be going, well, you know, if he was my friend, he'd call me. Well, that works both ways. Well, if I'm his friend, I'd call him.
Right.
And so somebody makes that call, and then that's recognized by the other side, and that just bolsters that relationship. And then the connection reconnects.
Well, I don't know if you know this, but there was a period of time in our friendship where I kind of fell off for a little bit. And he didn't let me.
Right.
He would call me.
Yeah. Like,
where you been? What's up?
Yeah.
Because there was, and I don't remember what the heck I was going through at the time, but it was like I was withdrawing from everybody, from everything. And, you know, every time I thought it was like, you know, I mean, I didn't say it like this, but it's like, I don't have time for Mark.
Right.
I don't have time for that friendship.
Yeah.
It's, you initiated the contact. You're like, hey, I hadn't heard from you in a while. What are you up to?
Yeah.
And you initiated that to keep the friendship going. And,
well, I missed you.
Yeah. And I appreciate that because at that point, I needed you to do that because I didn't have the wherewithal to do that.
Yeah.
And I'd like to think that I've reciprocated that from time to time, but that moment stands out for me.
Yeah. Well, the reverse side of that was I was surprised by your reaction when I hadn't told you about all my recent medical situations. You were kind of hurt that I hadn't contacted you already.
Yeah.
And I had to recognize that for what it is. And that was just simply, dude, you can't call me and talk to me about this? And whether it was that or whatever it was, it doesn't matter. The intent was, you can call me. You can talk to me about this. You're in a place of some sort of need. Here I am.
Right.
So.
And I think that that's where really where the iron sharpens the iron.
Yeah.
You know, it's when everything's going great.
Yeah.
You know, we can laugh and talk about sharpening each other's iron. But it's when one part of the friendship is in need that the real. So, I don't know where else this conversation is going to lead, but the one thing that I hope that people lead with, and I'm actually leaning towards this being the talk at Joe Catholic on Saturday, is that you have to be, in men in particular, I don't think this intimate friendship thing, particularly in the environment that we live in today, is easy for guys to do.
No.
I think guys have a tendency to have superficial friendships and are afraid to be vulnerable with other men. And they don't make the time, going back to leisure, to invest in developing those friendships so that they can have someone that they can lean on and know that person will be there for them. And then also that they need to be there for them as well.
Yeah.
And I think that I've been reading a book lately called Intentional Discipleship. And I think that's part of it. I think that intentional discipleship starts with friendship.
Sure.
Because that's an encounter with Christ as well.
Yeah.
And there's not enough of that going on. And I think that, you know, we talk about new evangelization. I think at the core of new evangelization is don't be afraid to be friends with people.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah. Because this is what I was saying earlier. You want to share things with people. So you find a new cigar, you want to share it. You find a new show, you want to share it. You know, you find out God loves you, you want to share it.
Right. Because there are times throughout the day where we'll send each other a message or whatever, and say, hey, I just read this at, you know, went this morning. You know, we got affirmation. You know, we had planned this talk last week or late last week or early this week, not knowing that today's scriptural response to the Alleluia is John 15:15.
Mm-hmm.
And I shared that with you this morning.
Yep.
And that was a little bit of an aha moment.
Yeah. You know? Kind of a Holy Spirit moment.
Absolutely.
So how's your cigar doing?
It has rehabilitated itself, and it has rehabilitated itself with a punch.
Really?
Yeah. The bottom part, or the last part of this cigar, is very strong.
Yeah, I'm noticing that myself.
I'm feeling it.
Yeah.
So I may be a little wobbly when I stand up.
You got anything else that you've gleaned from the catechism?
Not that I have time to cover. It gets deep quick.
Yeah.
Because,
go ahead.
You, like I said, you kind of come, it's, there's such a strong tie-in between our friendship with God and our friendship with fellow man, and what all that entails. And in a very broad nutshell, our friendship with our friends, human friends, if you will, is made easier and more fruitful if we maintain and continue to build our stronger friendship with God.
True.
And having a prayer life with God is one of the easiest ways to build that friendship. I like to tell, people, you can't pick up the phone and call heaven and go, hey, can Christ take a time out? I got a question. But you can always simply just remind yourself of your baptism, give yourself a sign of the cross, and say, hey, Lord, I need you. And he hears. You can do things like read scripture, help teach yourself about our faith through the catechism. You can take part in the sacraments. Part of friendship is being chaste.
Chaste, C-H-A-S-E-D, or chaste, C-H-A-S-T-E?
Chastity.
Okay.
Because, to explain that, paragraph 2344, and this kind of hit me, and I had to think about this for a little while too, to make sense. It says, chastity represents an eminently personal task. It also involves a cultural effort, for there is an interdependence between personal betterment and the improvement of society. Chastity presupposes respect for the rights of the person. And then with that means that you're taking part in reconciliation because we are inherently going to have venial sins. I'm going to quote St. Augustine here again, because a lot of people don't register that we need to confess our venial sins. And the reason, it's not that venial sins remove us from God's grace, because they don't necessarily do so. However, if we let venial sins build and build, we expose ourselves to greater opportunities of mortal sin, which will remove us from God's grace. And how St. Augustine puts it, he says that while he is in the flesh, man cannot help but have at least some light sins. But do not despise these sins, which we call light. If you take them for light when you weigh them, tremble when you count them. A number of light objects makes a great mass. A number of drops fill a river. A number of grains make a heap. What then is our hope? Above all, confession. And for us as Catholic men and women, it is through reconciliation with a contrite heart that we're able to find ourselves in the fullness of God's grace and open ourselves back up to that full friendship. And then in turn, we can fully and comfortably and with joy and peace take part in the Eucharist. And the more that we find, the more opportunities we find to take the Eucharist, the more we are going, the stronger we will naturally become with Christ.
Well, what you're describing there is fortifying your friendship with Christ. And you described a number of different ways that are ways to build that relationship. I think one thing that we suffer from as Catholics, and this is one of the things I've been reading in this book, is that we've, as a bigger church, I think that we've fallen into this kind of pattern of cultural Catholicism, that if people, Yeah, well, the kids, you know, they get confirmed and they run away from the church when they go to college. They'll come back because of the sacraments, and that's just not happening. And what needs to happen is that people need to realize, because one of the stats in this book that just blew me away is the number of Catholics that think they can't have a personal relationship with Christ. They'll wind up in an evangelical church, and they'll say they're there, not because you've talked, Kevin, before about the lack of liturgy in the Protestant churches, but it's because they feel like they have a better connection with Christ in that evangelical church than they do in the Catholic Church. And I think that we have to talk about that.
Yeah.
You know, I hear guys, I've heard guys do a Catholic talk about, well, they'll say they have a personal relationship with Christ, but then you ask them, do you have a daily prayer life? Oh, no, I don't need that. Well, tell me, what friendship do you have with anybody that can sustain itself without spending time with that person or talking with that person? It just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Now, a good friend may continue to reach out to you as Christ continues to reach out to us, but there still has to be this reciprocity that takes place there.
Yeah.
And so, I call BS when somebody says, well, I have a personal relationship, but I don't pray.
Yeah.
Or I don't participate in the sacraments.
Yeah, who do you have a relationship with then?
Yeah.
You know, I think a corollary to what you were saying is, if you're not in right relationship with God, you're not in right relationship with anybody, no matter what it looks like or how you think it is. Because you have to have that right relationship with God, I think, to fully have the proper relationship with your fellow man and with your spouses and with your friends.
I agree. I mean, when you look at, if you're really doing a proper examination of conscience, and you're really doing that self analysis, I think you'll see that if you're not taking part in the sacraments, if you're not fully engaged in that relationship with God, and then you take that and you look at your relationships with your spouse or your friends or even coworkers, you'll start to see areas of opportunity. And I know personally, I've seen that when that relationship with God, when those steps are made, that your other relationships with fellow man, again, spouse, et cetera, they improve as well. Generally, with little to no effort on your part.
Yeah.
And it's simply because, I think, if for nothing else, your mind is in a different place. You're on a different level.
Yeah.
Because you're focused on that mutual betterment.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
It does. Can I ask you to reread that one part that you said you had to think about some?
The chastity?
Yeah.
Make sure I didn't, lose my spot here. Chastity represents an eminently personal task. It also involves a cultural effort, for there is an interdependence between personal betterment and the improvement of society. It goes on and talks about chastity presupposes respect for the rights of the person, in particular the right to receive information and an education that respect the moral and spiritual dimensions of human life. If we wanted to take a little further, paragraph 2347 talks about the virtue of chastity blossoms in friendship and is expressed notably in friendship with one's neighbor. Whether it develops between persons of the same or opposite sex, friendships represent a great good for all. It leads to spiritual communion.
The word chastity is more than simply, most people when they hear chaste, they think, what's the word, the other C word?
Celibate?
Celibate. Because everybody focuses on sex, okay? But chastity is a commitment to the dignity of the other person. We've talked before, what's the opposite of love? And, most of the times you ask somebody what's the opposite of love, they'll say hate. You said it was disinterest, mm-hmm. and I said it was use. And the thing about chastity is chastity does not allow you to use people, so it's not that utilitarian friendship. So the thing about chastity is it again is putting the other person's needs ahead of your own. Instead of love turning into lust, love turns into love. One of the problems we have with the English language, we've got one word for love.
Right.
And in the Greek, they've got four, actually, and I can't remember all of them, but agape and filial, and, you know, there's, I used to think there was three, there's apparently a fourth one, but the point is, there's a large vocabulary used to express that, and so in some ways it's easier to talk about love between two men when you're thinking in terms of these types of love, that we have to phrase it as types of love. But in the ultimate, you know, the difference between love and lust, love is wanting what's best for the other. Lust is wanting what's best for you. Lust is use. Love is the opposite of use.
And the church talks about that too, in the catechism too as well. If you continue to read past that, it talks about how we can be, how chastity can be fully and properly expressed within one's own vocation. Mm-hmm. Whether you're a single individual called to the priesthood or married, and then it dwells into violations thereof. And usually with chastity, those will tend to fall into the mortal sin. But like, we're bringing sin. I wasn't joking when I said it was a full circle. Yeah. It all comes back.
So any final thoughts on friendship?
I have a question. Because one of the talks that I listened to in preparing for tonight said that the particular speaker made the comment that he didn't think that you could have many authentic friendships because of the kind of a issue of breadth and depth.
Yeah.
And because the limitations of time and all of that. And I'm wondering how y'all feel about that. You know, I tend to think that that's probably a true statement.
I think it is true simply because we're limited and we can't give ourselves to everyone because we don't have the resources for that. So I think that is a acknowledgement of the reality of being finite beings.
No, I agree because, you know, there are people in my life who, you know, when you cut it for what it is, they're acquaintances. They're people who I enjoy spending time with, who I enjoy seeing, but ultimately that friendship, that real friendship, hasn't blossomed. And I think that's where that comes into play, is that no matter how much effort I really put into, especially now that I'm a father, it's just cut into. My priorities have changed.
Sure.
And so, again, talking about that finite time and resources, I agree with that statement, that to have that true ultimate friendship with fellow man, you're not going to be able to have 5,000 friends, true friends. You're just not. You're not going to have enough time.
Right.
You know, I count. I've got, in my life personally, I've got three to five guys that I can truly say are friends. And, you know, there's a whole slew of other people who I care about, who I'd love to have that time with. And it's not that I wouldn't do anything for them, but when you look at everything that we've discussed tonight about what entails a friendship, it's just not there.
Right.
Doesn't make it necessarily a bad thing. It just means that there's opportunity for growth.
Well, and like I said, it's just an acknowledgement of the reality of being a finite being.
And I think it also calls into mind prudence.
Yeah.
That it's prudent to to have a limit. Because otherwise, I think at the point where you start stretching yourself too thin, other existing relationships will suffer.
Yeah.
The two things that come to mind that I'd like to leave with is, number one is that if someone's listening to the podcast finds themselves and say, well, I don't really have a friend like that, then be intentional about it.
Right.
And that can manifest itself in a number of different ways. And I think that one of the things that we didn't really talk about, but I think that the two superficial types of friendships can develop into authentic friendships.
Yeah.
Given that they're steered towards virtue, number one, and number two, that there's an intentionality, and that you find that common ground that you can build off of.
Right.
Whether it's sitting down and having a cigar and having conversation. Because, I mean, in addition to us spending, 1 week and a month together for 3 years, we still had conversation. And it wasn't right. just about studying together or the right. misery of trying to get one more paper in.
Right.
But that happens. So I think that, be the first one. Don't be afraid to be the one to take the first step in developing that friendship. You never know when the other guy is looking for that, but he's just too afraid to take that first step.
Yeah.
And then the second thing is that St. Thomas Aquinas said that the, and I can't remember, I think it's in the Secundum, that the greatest friendship is between a husband and a wife.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's indissoluble. And it's indissoluble because it echoes the relationship between Christ and the church.
Right.
And ultimately, that's where we turn to see the passages that Kevin read from the Catechism as well as some of the Scripture, is that we find our model in Christ. That Christ reaches out to us in charity to be our friend. And within our finite opportunities, we should seek out those type of friendships to build up the common good.
Yeah. So I guess my final thought is I'm reminded of the movie It's a Wonderful Life. And if anybody hadn't seen that movie, I'm shocked, because there was a period of time there where you couldn't get away from it at Christmas time. But there's a scene in there when the character played by Jimmy Stewart is on the bridge. He's absolutely distraught, and he just stops and he says, God, show me the way. And when you're having that kind of an internal crisis, I'm not talking about you're out of gas on the side of the road, but you're having that sort of internal crisis of identity, crisis of self, God will answer that call at 3:00 in the morning. You had mentioned that you called that guy because you didn't know who else to call, and it probably strengthened the friendship. And if we are at that point where we finally just, we don't know who else to call, we call on God, it'll strengthen that friendship.
All right. Any final thoughts on the cigars? I saw your cigar went out fairly early.
I talk too much.
I hear you.
My only complaint about my cigar is that it ended before the podcast.
All right. Well, mine did rehabilitate itself and it packed a punch at the end, and I felt it and got the sweaty forehead and the woo.
Yeah.
So, good cigar. I'm reminded why I don't smoke them all the time. And I still have a bag full of them.
Yeah.
So it's a once in a while sort of thing. Even with a pretty hearty dinner, it still packed a punch at the end for me. The scotch was incredible.
Good.
It was dangerously smooth.
Yeah.
Because I could have poured myself a little bit more, which I'm not going to do. In prudence.
Yes.
But definitely going to add this to the rotation, I think.
Very good. All right. Anything else?
My lemonade was fantastic.
Awesome.
All right. Well, we hope you enjoyed tonight's show and maybe inspired to either fortify an existing friendship or develop a new friendship. And one good way to do that is sitting down in conversation and smoke them if you got them.
All right. Good night.